There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Monday, and good to see my friend in studio, and he is part of Veterans Month here on FM Talk 106.5, brought to you by Onsite Auto Body Solutions. We talk a lot of politics with this man, and we might do some of it today, but first of all, I want to welcome Navy veteran and my friend Robert Kennedy Jr. into studio. Thank you for your service.
Good afternoon, Sean, and it was my honor to be able to serve, so I should...
Every one of you jokers say the same dang thing.
Well, I mean, I should be thanking you for the opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, it was interesting. I was telling you off air that this past weekend, I was up in Montgomery as a part of Senator Katie Britt's Service Academy nomination panel, and so there were two additional Academy grads, one from West Point and one from the Air Force Academy, as well as two members of her staff, and we got to talk to 80 of the most motivated and inspirational young people you could ever meet who are looking to volunteer to serve.
It is it's an awesome story, and I like to start all these interviews off with the enlistment story. You know, I've talked about it before, mm-hmm. but there's always new people listening. So there you are. You're at Shaw. You're a mm-hmm. senior. When did you decide? When did you have the moment where you said, "This is what I'm going to do"?
Okay, so the moment was actually in the seventh grade.
Of course it is.
I was watching the Army Navy game with my father, who was career Army,
right?
Sergeant First Class, U.S. Army, retired. And I know you're going to find this shocking, but I was cheering for Navy because he was cheering for Army.
Yes, yes.
And that was the point at which he told me it was a school. And so from that point forward, it was always my first choice of where I wanted to go to school.
You know, a father does everything he can to raise a young man to do that. And you go, and we all of us young men find some way to push back a little bit.
I never even got the application to West Point. That's how focused I was on going to the Naval Academy.
Oh my gosh, he probably looked at you and said, Robert,
That story, there's a funny postscript to that story that I'll tell a little bit later, but yeah.
So you knew by the seventh grade, so you were already on that track for the Naval Academy. But doing that, like you said, it is not just, I mean, it's a process of being exemplary in academics, in civic life, and mm-hmm. and running, there's a narrow part to that hourglass to get into those academies.
Sure. And, you know, one of the blessings in my life, and I actually love to tell this story, when we talk about the story of America, particularly with you and I being children of the Civil Rights Movement,
right,
was, you know, I wanted to go to the Naval Academy, but I didn't have any idea how to actually do it. And I was actually in the American Legion Oratorical Contest my junior year, and the contest was administered by the American Legion, and two members of the American Legion are names that folks will recognize. One was Big John Tyson,
uh-huh.
And the second was Judge John Butler. Mm-hmm. And Judge John Butler is still
Butler, yeah.
just as spry as always, and I got to see him a few weeks ago. But the two of them, after that oratorical contest, started talking to me and trying to understand, well, what did I want to do for my future? And so I told him I wanted to go to the Naval Academy. Big John was a Navy vet. And so the two of them started tag-teaming Congressman Sonny Callahan, who was also a Navy veteran.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I got to meet Congressman Callahan, Joe Bonner, who's the chief of staff at the time, or whatever. But 17 years old, these folks took an interest in me. And they were the ones where I would say, okay, you need to meet Captain Alan Pate, who was a blue and gold officer. They got me in touch with the minority recruiting office from the Naval Academy. And then all of a sudden, I was in the system. And so that just shows the power of a community coming together to support all the stuff that was happening in my community in Pritchard and Tolmanville, mm-hmm. where they were helping me. But the two things came together to actually get me on the path to the Naval Academy.
And then you arrive, you know, coming from Now, he came from a military family, so mm-hmm. It wasn't completely out of the blue.
Sure.
But big change there. From the high school rules to the Naval Academy rules?
Well, sure, it was. And again, this is a wonderful thing as well. We talk about the way that we've grown up, mm-hmm. particularly when we talked about some of the issues that we have in our community at large. But we really had a foundation of discipline in our family and in our larger village, if you will, mm-hmm. So that at the end of the day, all we had to kind of do was keep our head down, work hard, and do what we were told. And then we were going to progress through the system. So it was good.
So you when you graduate, let's follow this through, because my friend has done this twice. So you come out of the Academy, you're in for how many years when you come out of the Academy?
So the active duty obligation is 5 years.
Okay.
I actually ended up doing 9 years on active duty, because at my 5 year point, which is the point at which I would have transitioned out, I actually had the opportunity to go back to graduate school. And it was through the Naval Postgraduate School. And it was the pipeline where they were preparing folks to go on to staff at the Naval Academy. So prior to that point, what they would do is they would just take junior military officers like I was and send them directly from the fleet to the school environment. And the challenge with that was you would be looking at the students who are called midshipmen like you looked at sailors.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually not. They're young people, college-age students that are going through the early adult transition. And so what the Navy figured out was that they needed to put us through a graduate school program. West Point had been doing this previously. Air Force had been doing this previously as well. And by going through the grad school program, it literally changed my entire perspective on how I thought about the job. So it was more about development, more about coaching along the way, because you had 4 years to get them ready. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to be ready at age 18. You needed them to be ready at age 22.
Right.
And so I went on to staff, and by virtue of going through that graduate school program, that gave me another 3 years of obligated service.
Okay.
So once I completed that obligated service on staff at the Naval Academy, that's the point in which I transitioned off of active duty.
Okay. So you do that. You've now done all that time of service, and then something happened.
Yes. So my last day of active duty was July 19th, 2001. Highlight that year.
Yeah.
July 19th, 2001. So go down to graduate school, where on the first day of grad school, looking across the proverbial crowded room,
yes.
I saw the woman who would become my future wife.
He meets the better Kennedy,
yes,
at that point.
Yes, yes. I meet my better half. Shout out to Auckland. I know she's listening. I love you, Auckland. So I see her. Of course, she was hooked up with somebody else at the time, so we had to wait him out. But be that as it may.
I never heard that part of it. Okay.
Be that as it may, yes, I'm down there. I've started school. We're literally having a team meeting that morning, and then somebody pokes their head and say, hey, there was just an accident in New York City. It looked like a plane flew into the World Trade Center. And so what we were thinking at the time was it was one of those little, like, tourist prop planes that was flying around.
Yeah. I was on the air when it happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember this. I was trying in my brain to make it something that I hadn't even thought about, the possibility of the terrorist attack.
Sure, sure. And then a few minutes later, you heard people start screaming, you know, kind of the way it would if you know, somebody had a heart attack in the hallway or something like that. And we had all of these televisions
that were
all throughout the hallway. And so we all came out, and then we started seeing the pictures of what was going on. So everyone just kind of broke and ended up going home and stuff like that. But yeah, so after 9/11, I actually ended up reaffiliating with the Navy Reserves. That's the process. It's called reaffiliation. And then I spent the rest of my time in the Navy Reserves.
You know, it's interesting because that story from somebody who was older at that point to get back into – I talked to young men that were sitting in their high school econ class, you know, that saw it as well, and went to and enlisted. It was, it's not Pearl Harbor, but it's our version of Pearl Harbor. The way enlistment happened,
you know, it's amazing to think about it now, because on that particular day, my brother Jeff Kennedy is a career firefighter. Did it in Air Force, has done it as a civilian. Right now, he is an assistant fire chief at one of the largest fire departments in the state where he lives right now. But we were on the phone all day. And with him being a firefighter, before it even registered in my head, he was like, those buildings are going to fall because of the temperature of jet fuel, et cetera, et cetera. But yes, just it was that whole thing, that feeling like I'd spent all this year, all these years being trained by the military to do a particular job. Mm-hmm. And I'm a surface warfare officer. I'm a ship guy, mm-hmm. right? But if the Navy needed me for whatever reason, I wanted to be available to the Navy. And so just by given the nature of the war, they weren't involuntarily activating mm-hmm. anyone. The only folks who really got those calls were the Special Warfare, Navy SEALs, EOD, which is the ordnance disposal, the people who defuse bombs, mm-hmm. right? Those people got called, but the ship guys never got called.
You know, looking at that point, too, from your eyes as a military man and other veterans I've talked to, the idea of would this be another 1 year? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that we had dealt with 1 year and
sure.
2 year conflicts, 3 year conflicts. To know that that was, and I would say that GWAD is not even over at this mm-hmm. point, but I mean, knowing that you were going into a decades-long conflict.
Sure.
It was sure. just unknown at that point.
So here's the way I actually like to think about that part of my life was I graduated from graduate school in 1998. So my first class of students that mm-hmm. I would have been responsible for graduated with the class of 99, class of 2000, class of 2001.
Right.
And to think of those students who did 20 years of service, they were at war the entire time.
Yeah.
They never knew what it was like to be on active duty, not in a state of war.
And that had been the thing for guys our age, that there was this long period of – there were conflicts.
Sure.
But not 20 years, your whole career at war.
Those are the ones that we were in and out. So even think about Iraq 1 versus mm-hmm. Iraq 2. Mm-hmm. They were both relatively short.
Yes.
Right. So.
And then – that happened.
Indeed.
Continue our conversation with Robert Kennedy Jr. I want to say this, too. He is, just like every other veteran that I talk to, y'all come back, you're finished. Most people think, okay, you're finished. And to a man, every one of y'all, and to a woman, every one of y'all continues to give back
sure.
to veterans. It's a thing that is, it must be, I don't know if it's mission. I don't know if it's just, you learned it in the halls of the Naval Academy or in the halls of a ship. You know, or a Marine learns it at basic, or they learned it in theater. Army men learn it, Air Force. Every one of y'all continues to give back to our community here with South Alabama Veterans Council, with Mobile Area, Bay Area Veterans Commission. It's an amazing thing. So we're going to continue this conversation. We come back and get your questions at 343-0106. Our guest, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, 122 FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. They'll say hi to my buddy David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. What's shaking here on a Monday?
Well, I tell you what, it's busy Monday. We have been covered up all morning. We've already delivered two today, and we've got a lot of stuff working, so we've got a really good inventory, and that's why we're busy. I mean, if you haven't been out here and seen what we've got, you're missing an opportunity to come check it out. I mean, we've got more cars than Mexico's got sand.
Every time we talk, you're like, here's another truck coming, you know, or you're somewhere buying a truck worth a truckload of vehicles, and then they're being delivered. So that obviously tells me you're getting the right vehicles because you're having to resupply.
We try, you know, you get a knack for what the customers are looking for. And as long as you buy or you attempt to buy a really nice vehicle and you make sure everything's been done to it and reconditioned, I mean, we're not perfect, but we try to make sure everything's done. We try to make sure everybody's got a warranty before they leave out of here. And that makes a big difference, making sure the customer's taken care of, because a lot of our business is repeat business and we can't afford to lose them.
Got that right. Tell folks how to find you.
We're at Highway 90 and Plantation in Theodore. It's 1 mile south of I-10, exit 15A. If you give us a call at 251-375-0068, or just go to the website, lcmmotorcars.com.
Hey, thank you, David.
Talk soon.
All right, there goes David McCrary at LCM Motor Cars. Continue a conversation with his fellow Shaw High School graduate.
That's right, Shaw High School, class of 88.
This question came up. And I mentioned to you during the break, but and I want to add too, Fire Dog said the mission doesn't end just because you're out of the military ever. And I've seen that with all you.
Yeah. And I think the thing that's interesting is we go back to the mission in the Naval Academy. We talk about command, citizenship, and government is kind of what you're preparing folks for. So literally day one, we're learning things like take care of your people, lead by example. And so this notion of taking care of the folks that are within your span or reach doesn't go away. And some of the best things that we've been able to do are not necessarily the things we did in uniform, although we're very happy about those, but just having the skills to respond to situations that are happening in society as well. And I think that is really the gift and why it is that we're so honored to have been able to serve, knowing that we can continue to serve.
Speaking of that, so Houndstooth had texted earlier when Todd Stacey was on, said, tell Todd Stacey we care that we know we care about veterans down in Mobile more than the rest of the state. So what's wrong with the rest of the state? And that's a question you and I had. Like,
sure.
It's, you know, you grow up. I mean, I grew up in a town that had a battleship. I didn't realize everybody else didn't have a battleship
until
I was probably 12, 13 years old. Mm-hmm. What is it that we have down here that they don't? When this has all come up with Admiral Davis, this big group from here is going up, you know, South Alabama Veterans Council and all that. Where's the one from Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, Birmingham, but you know, Oneonta, wherever?
Well, obviously, I'm not in any of those other places, so I can't speak to them in terms of what they don't have. But I can really, you know, double click on what it is we do have down here. And that's so think about the organization that I'm part of as an individual. So I'm a part of the Navy League, mm-hmm. right? You would expect that. I'm part of the Naval Academy Alumni Association. You would expect that. I am a surface warfare officer by training. So I'm part of the Surface Navy Association of the Gulf Coast, right?
Okay.
But then there are other organizations that are all kind of pointed in the same direction, whether you're talking about the American Legion, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Disabled American Veterans. And the magic that has been created here in Mobile is whether you're talking about the Veterans Committee at the Mobile Chamber of Commerce or whether you're talking about the Southwest Alabama Veterans Council or the group that comes together to put on the Veterans Day festivities every year. It's all the same people. And we're constantly interacting with people, whether it's within the thing that's limited to our service or something that's more integrated in nature. And so we really have magic down here mm-hmm. when it comes to our veterans community. And we are able to mobilize quickly and come together whenever it is that we see something that we're probably not that happy with.
Yeah.
As what the situation that ended up happening with Admiral Davis.
Yeah. It is a situation, too, that until I got into learning about this, mm-hmm. I didn't realize how bad it was in 2017,
mm-hmm.
where we were, how we – you get this idea, once again, shame on me, but you get this idea, this is Alabama. We love our veterans. We're going to take care of our veterans. We probably do it better than any other state, and I find out the inverse is true.
So there are several stories that I have with regards to this, and most of this, the stories that we tell during Veterans Month are stories that are very positive, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
But we do have an obligation to
tell
the
truth. But I'm not going to whistle past grave.
Yeah, we have to have an obligation to tell the truth. And so this particular situation, I'll just frame it for you. So the federal government, through the Veterans Administration, is the group that's responsible for taking care of veterans. When you're able to get an appointment and to get into that system, the quality of care that you get is exceptional. But when it comes to some issues, particularly some of the rules that changed immediately after 9/11 and some of the things that have changed more recently, there's more need than there's ability for the federal system to process that need. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden you have a gap that is created. That gap is typically filled either at the state level or through nonprofits, community, et cetera, et cetera. And so at the end of the day, what we have to figure out is that veteran who has exhibited the courage to ask for help and has reached out and now gets an appointment in 92 days, we have to figure out how to get that veteran seen within 24 hours.
Yeah.
And that's the problem that we ultimately have to solve. And I think, unfortunately, what ended up happening was as solutions end up being surfaced of ways to potentially address this either through the Alabama State Department of Veterans Affairs or associated community, church, nonprofit organizations that some feathers may have gotten mm-hmm. ruffled during that process, because although it's just critiquing the system, it's not anybody's fault, because at the end of the day, we just want to make sure that one of the 143 veterans who ended up dying by suicide in the state of Alabama doesn't in the future.
Yeah, y'all listen to that number. I mean, it's the way I look at it. I remember grandfather used to say, you know, quit complaining and do something.
Mm-hmm.
So people could just say, well, the VA is not going to be it's a battleship. Mm-hmm. It takes a long time to move it.
Sure.
It's not okay to just say, well, in the meantime, We'll just complain about it.
Right. And here's a personal example, and I have one that's a little bit more impactful. I'll tell you after the break. But my personal example was I came home, ran for office in 2018 for United States Congress, so I was not working at the time. I go down Spring Hill Avenue, where the old VA was located, mm-hmm. to fill out my paperwork to get access to my benefits, to discover I am not eligible because the year prior, in 2017, I had made too much money. Do you know what the dollar threshold was for too much money?
What?
It was $35,000.
So it's poverty.
So Kennedy's fine, right? The Kennedys are fine. We'll be able to take care of that. But think about that veteran who is making $37,000 a year
who doesn't
not eligible for their benefits.
My gosh. Coming back, more with Robert Kennedy Jr. right here on the Day Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065.
Right to 135, FM Talk 1065, Midday Mobile. Segment of the show brought to you by my man Clint Jameson at Adventure Earth Bicycles, home of the e-bike I'm riding. I've got the off-road e-bike, which, by the way, he has a shipment in right now, the Venago hunting e-bikes. Mine's like a hunting, it's an off-road e-bike. It's got the big tires, they have your suspension. Love this bike. Use it on the farm all the time. He's got a shipment of the hunting e-bikes. If you've been toying with that idea, he's got them in stock now with the 4-inch fat tires, a 750-watt motor. All you got to do is go down and take a test ride. 75 e-bikes ready to go to take a test ride at any time at Adventure Earth Bicycles. Plus, he realizes Christmas is coming up, so he has a great selection of kids' bikes as well. Balance and Strider children's bikes back in stock, full variety of colors. And you can put that kid on the bicycle, put a helmet on that noggin. He's got a big selection of the e-bike rated and regular bike rated helmets in stock, plus all the, you can accessorize bikes like nothing before. I mean, water bottle holders and panniers and lights. And listen, if you can be put on a bike, it's there at Adventure Earth Bicycles. And plus, they're a good old-fashioned bike shop. Remember, like when we were kids, he actually does service work on the bikes. If you buy a bike from him, you get quarterly service work done. But even if you bought it somewhere else, you need to make sure it's tuned up, ready to go. Clint is your man at Adventure Earth Bicycles, corner of Little Flower and Airport in Midtown, kind of across from Bruce Chris, online at adventure-earth.com. Adventure Earth Bicycles, everything inside to get you outside. All right, continue our conversation, a Veterans Month conversation with my friend Robert Kennedy Jr. And a couple things here. So, I mean, I continue to talk about your service to our country and the continued service, but that's what we're doing here, the continued service to our veterans. You're not just an advocate. You saw it firsthand in 2017, right?
Yeah, so that's when I was saying when I was trying to sign up for my own benefits. There's actually a financial component to it that exists now. And that happened after 9/11 because there was so much, you know, overwhelming need in the system. And what the Veterans Administration is trying to figure out is whether or not you have any other means to get it other than through the Veterans Administration directly. And like I was saying, we're blessed to be in the financial situation where we could just buy it on the open market.
Sure.
But I'm thinking about that person who is making significantly less than what we were doing as the Kennedys.
Right.
And who's trying to help that person, because that creates the gap.
Yeah, and I guess I have an infantile or naive version of it in my head, mm-hmm. that when y'all take the oath, we just entered into a contract.
That's correct.
You know,
that's
and right. So we the people, I want to live up to that contract.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of, that's my heart. It may not be my brain, that's my heart.
Sure, and just to put this in more direct context, I had given a speech to Mobile Chamber last year, and that speech centered around the best day of my professional life. And that was when I was part of a team that actually ended up rescuing a group of sailors from a ship that was sinking. Those sailors were actually Iranian in the territorial waters of Iran, and we actually participated in this.
Remember, y'all were right there on the line.
Yep. But there was the corollary to that is the worst day of my professional life. And this is once we were at sea in the Indian Ocean, and I received written reports from three sailors, female sailors on my team, accusing a male sailor on my team of sexual harassment, sexual assault, and rape. And so imagine I'm 26 years old in the middle of the ocean.
Oh my God.
And I have to decide what it is I'm going to do. I pick up the satellite phone and I call Naval Criminal Investigative Service in Singapore because that was where I was closest to geographically. And the investigators met us on the pier as soon as we docked went through the whole process. He ended up getting convicted at courts martial, did brig time, et cetera, right? So you look at something like that in 96, 97, and you think that's the end of the story, and it's end of the story that is positive. Well, about a year ago, I'd gotten a Facebook messenger from one of the young ladies who was affected that had gone into like a spam folder.
Oh,
and so I didn't see it for like 8 months later. And what she was asking was she was asking for my assistance with another one of the sailors who was impacted with that. She and I finally connected. And what the issue was she was trying to submit a claim for PTSD associated with military sexual trauma. And basically the VA is asking her to prove it. And so she didn't have lots of memories of the incident and what happened because it was so long ago. And we are much better suited now as a society of understanding some of the impacts and how people repress things that happened years and years ahead of time. Fortunately, I remembered everything associated with the incident. So I was able to actually write the letter for her. And then I was also able to give them the suggestion to find the Naval Criminal Investigative
Report. That's what I was wondering. Would it be?
That actually happened. They found the report.
Okay.
Right. But the point is, you're having to go through these hurdles to try to figure out how to access the benefits that you're actually eligible for.
Do you think there would be, I mean, she's reaching out to you, but there would be a in-place ombudsman or something, right?
The
easy button.
Yeah, so she ended up reaching out to that person because they're local. They're all distributed throughout the country. And through their conversations back and forth, she was asking, was there anybody who may have knowledge of that incident? And that's why they were reaching out to me. But the point was, it was hard for them to find me. But they found me eventually, and I was fortunate in that I remembered enough about the incident to be able to write it up as part of the submission for our package. The point that I'm trying to illustrate is there are examples after examples after examples, particularly when we start talking about mental health, PTSD, traumatic brain injury, depression, anxiety, or whatever, that are all these mental health-related issues that we need to be proactive in figuring out how to solve it. And so when you look at what happened with the Alabama Department of Veterans Affairs— That's not getting us closer.
No.
It's getting us further away. And so we definitely have work that we need to continue to do as a veteran community and as a community at large to make sure that veterans are getting the benefits to which they are entitled. And so from our perspective, every day is Veterans Day.
Yeah, well said. And that outreach, too, is there a way to, you know, make sure the veterans know what's – and hopefully we get these benefits in a better situation in the state – quicker access, not a 90-day appointment. We get that day. How do we make sure the veterans have the – I mean, let's go old school, the magnet on the refrigerator. You know what I'm saying, that says call this line or something?
Sure, sure. Well, one of the things that we're doing right now, and this is full disclosure, Vets Recover is one of the organizations here in Mobile, Alabama that is doing it and that is doing it right. Under the leadership of our CEO, John Kilpatrick, under the leadership of the board of directors, Jerry Steele, really doing great work and have figured out how to solve this problem. And so there are many organizations like this throughout our state and our country that we need to continue to support because these are the folks who are on the front line actually filling that gap to decrease the amount of days where they can actually get care prior to going into something like the VA system. We need to figure out how to better support them.
Yeah, it seems like if we can figure out a lot of, you know, I go back to the cliche, if I can get pictures from Mars, Robert, we should be able to do this.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Do you think we're, I mean, you're a positive guy. Do you think we solve this soon, medium, late?
I think we have the ability to solve this problem almost immediately. But what it requires is for us really to study the truth. We have to know exactly what happened. And lay it all out there so that the public can actually decide where it is that they fall down on this particular issue. Because one of the benefits of some of the work that we do right now is we, through our study and our confirmations, are able to see one layer deeper than what is typically being reported in the media. And I think that the more that folks like yourself continue to interview the parties involved, what Todd Stacey ends up doing up there in the northern part of the state as well, as long as we keep asking questions, eventually the truth is going to come out. And once you expose the truth to light, then all of a sudden the path is clear and where it is we need to go from this point forward. And I think we will get there.
You know, it's a great attitude, and it's one I have too. I know there's a lot of people in this, and maybe I seem this way, that want to take scalps. Okay.
Yep.
But what I truly want is the problem fixed.
And one of the,
and that's where I am. And maybe in the meantime, it seems like I'm on a warpath. I guess I am. But I just want I just want it solved.
Well, it's like we have to focus on the truth, and then there is accountability. And everyone is accountable, from the appointed folks to the elected folks. Everybody is accountable for their actions. And so the only thing that I would ask as a veteran here in the state of Alabama is that our elected officials take the extra effort to try to learn what the truth is, because the truth is not what it appears at first glance.
Well said. And to you, thank you, sir, for your service to our country. From my family to you, thank you.
All right. Well, hey, you take care of yourself, and we will look forward to talking to you about politics.
Oh, yeah, next time we'll be.
Yeah. All right, my friend. You take care now.
You too. Coming right back. More of Midday Mobile and Veterans Month continues. Dr. Luke Angerizer joins me next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to Midday Mobile, and time for a checkup, and at the same time, a celebration of Veterans Month here on FM Talk 106.5. Dr. Luke Angerizer back in studio. Good to see you.
Oh, thanks for having me, Sean.
And happy Veterans Month to you as well.
Oh, thank you, Sean. I appreciate that.
We talk about veterans in the state of Alabama. It's obviously a national thing, but this is where we live. And you've had a lot of time working with the Army and working on mental health for veterans. Kind of talk about where we were when you started and where we are now. Are we progressing?
Yeah. So, you know, when I started out in the Army, this was before 9/11. We actually weren't involved in any major combat operations, but that obviously changed overnight. So, you know, in my career in the Army, during my residency, we went to war in Iraq and Afghanistan, and then had a series of deployments for many, many, many years after that. So it was really a lot of stress on our veterans during that era. And, you know, so many of them are still carrying a lot of those mental health wounds from that service.
You know, you and I have talked about this in the past as well, is the nature. I mean, obviously our World War II veterans suffered from this as well, had different names in World War I and World War II. But the nature of the way the deployments were in the global war on terror was maybe a magnifier for these mental health issues.
Yeah, it really was. And this was kind of an unprecedented thing for us. So again, in a war like World War II, a veteran would deploy to the combat theater. They would be, unless they were injured, they would be there until the war was over. And with these recent conflicts, we did something completely different that we've never done before in our history. So we asked veterans to go on repeated deployments. So they might deploy for 12 or 18 months, come back home, and then in a year or two, they might deploy again. And just the incredible stress that that placed on them and their families was just unbelievable.
Yeah. Thinking about like how somebody would assimilate World War II, you served, you came home. Those men obviously had an assimilation time, but it was a one-time deal, like to reassimilate into civilian society versus people deploy for 7 to 12 months. They got to come home and reassimilate for 3 months or 6 months, and then they get deployed again and have to. That's the thing I think is not, I appreciate you talking about that because I don't think a lot of us look at that.
Yeah. And one of my mentors when I was in my residency training, Simon Pincus, had written a paper some years before. He was a Bosnia combat veteran. And he talked about the cycle of deployment and where the stress was. And it was the stress leading up to deployment, the stress during deployment, and then the stress kind of returning from deployment, and talking about those different phases. You know, what we've had for the past 20 years is they were constantly in one of those three phases, and that was almost a never-ending thing.
Right. You didn't have that resolution of, okay, now I've gotten through this, I've gotten home, I'm not going to deal with that again, where in fact that they would.
Right. So there, you know, there's going to be a long period of transition, getting kind of reacquainted with one's loved ones, but then almost immediately, then you're getting ready to have to do that separation again.
Let's talk about it. If there are differences out there, because Dr. Angerizer, you know, with the Army, now with Alta Point, what was it like in the Army versus how you deal with it now at Alta Point?
Yeah. You know, we in the Army, it was a little bit different. I was in uniform. So we, you know, I was a soldier as well as a physician. And, you know, there's different roles in that, you know, I'm a military officer. I have to think about the combat strength and make sure that we had enough soldiers to fight our conflicts. At the same time, trying to be an advocate for my patients. So those are kind of two hats that you're wearing at the same time. And it's a real privilege to be able to do that. But, you know, we're at all to point where we're there to really help just with the healthcare needs of that person and meeting them where they're at and doing everything we can to help them through.
Well, you know, I also think about the challenges of getting somebody in. Heck, it's hard to get and I'll take issue with guys. I'm one of them to get us even go get our physical or a checkup, let alone people in the military that are Army, Air Force, Marine Corps, you know, Navy, taught to not talk about any kind of what could be perceived as having a problem.
Right.
That existed, right?
It does. And there's kind of a few different reasons for that. You know, the first is there is a focus on strength and resilience in the military, which is very understandable.
Yes.
But that can, you know, erroneously, some people may think that if I get help for a mental health issue, that means that I'm weak. That's not true at all. But again, people may have that feeling.
But they still do, see it with our veterans once their service is over.
Yeah,
and they
yeah.
still have.
They still,
it,
yeah, they still internalize. I've been out of the military for many, many years. I still carry a lot of those core values with me, and I always will, and they do as well, you know. And then the other thing that's just so difficult is, you know, somebody that may be struggling with something like post-traumatic stress disorder, the best thing that they can do to help themselves is to talk through that with a skilled, you know, therapist and physician. But that's so hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's painful to talk about those experiences, but going through that. Careful work is really important for the healing process.
What about and with the delay in that, I've seen this discussion where, you know, people with post-traumatic stress, you would think, okay, the day they get home is when they're dealing with it. Okay. But I've seen, you know, read works on this that it may not manifest for a year or two or more before it somehow comes back up.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's very, very unpredictable. For some, that was a problem right off the bat, but for most, that is something that developed over time. And there can be things that happen in their personal life, things that even happen on the level of our country that can really trigger that. So when we had kind of our precipitous withdrawal from Afghanistan,
yeah.
that was very triggering to a lot of combat veterans that had been involved in that conflict.
Yeah, it's interesting to see that, because people would think, well, you've been home for a while. What, you know, this should be all worked out. And in fact, it's not. And it's now risen to a bigger state than the day they got home from deployment.
Exactly. Yeah.
We're talking about post-traumatic stress disorder, also TBIs. This is a thing that it gets its way to even kids' sports. But we're talking about some impacts to brains. Battlefield, it's big time.
Yep. So you have a blow to your head or even to your body that ends up kind of jarring your head that can cause damage in the brain. And the difficult thing is we may not, and we probably won't even see evidence on that if we do imaging with a CT scan or MRI. There's nothing that we would see, but there is damage to the brain that can cause all kinds of symptoms that are very complicated and confusing. So, you know, headaches, fatigue, trouble sleeping, a lot of mood changes like irritability, mood swings. And, you know, somebody with a traumatic brain injury can carry those symptoms for many, many years.
Do those get, Dr. Enderizer, do those get better? If you broke your leg, for example, you know, you get it put in a cast and eventually, I mean, it's always, it gets better. It heals up the bone. Does the TBI get lessened over time? Or?
Yeah. And it's a great question, Sean. And the answer is sometimes yes, sometimes no. And it really, really depends on that person.
Okay. So it's not like, okay, at, you know, 1 week out, 2 weeks out, a month out, it's at this point, it's not the same.
Yeah, it's not the same. And it's not a difference from breaking your leg. It's not like we can put a cast on it and get it better. I mean, the treatment is very, because the symptoms are very complex and very complicated, the treatment is very complex. And we can help with specific symptoms, but there's not really a cure-all where we can do this one thing that's going to make everything better.
But if somebody's listening to you right now and you talk about the mood changes, the sleeping issues, those headaches, and they were in combat, that could be a sign that, you know, you get a couple of those checked off, we could be talking about a TBI.
We could be. And the important thing is if you get help. There are medications that can help. There's therapy that can help. One thing I'll mention to everybody in the community, my main place of clinical work is the Behavioral Health Crisis Center here in Mobile that Alta Point runs. And we are a 24/7 walk-in. You can think of us as like kind of a psychiatric emergency room slash, you know, a short stay inpatient hospital. Anybody that needs help, they can come to the crisis center and be evaluated.
Well, it's obviously needed. I mean, we go into the very sad statistics of the number of veterans taking their lives.
Yep. And that we've talked before about this, but it's such a tragic thing with our veterans. You know, traditionally, the suicide rate among active duty has been lower than the civilian population. That was not actually true. Over the past 20 years, there's been a higher suicide rate in active duty military than civilian population. And then that has continued as people have become veterans. So we have a suicide rate 1.5 times higher among veterans than the civilian population. And with female veterans, even more striking, 2.5 times higher among female veterans compared to civilian females.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that's new information to me. So 2.5 times for female veterans. You dug into that? Any research on why y'all think that might be?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of theories and a lot of reasons. The same combat experiences that male veterans experience, female veterans have experienced. There also has unfortunately been a high rate of sexual assaults that can occur among female veterans. That may be a part of it. It's just difficult being a woman sometimes and with different stressors and female veterans unfortunately have had much higher rates of death by suicide than civilian women.
Now, you know, I think about your 24-hour access, because this is one thing that somebody is at that point, a veteran at that point. And, I've learned to say the words, too, over time. This is kind of what brought me into this world, is having loved ones and friends that are veterans and learning to say, are you going to kill yourself? I know that's it was hard for me to learn that.
Yeah.
But at the point when somebody is there that you're asking that question, they can't make an appointment for 30 days from now to go see somebody. I mean, this is a clear and present danger to their lives.
Right. Right.
That's why I think it's important to be able.
Yeah. Ask that question there. We have a new emergency line, the 988 emergency number. So we always had 911 for emergencies. 988 is specifically for mental health emergencies. If you call that number, you'll be connected with local crisis services.
You're not going to be told, hey, we'll see you in 30 days.
No, absolutely not. And like I said, we have the crisis center. We're there for that reason. And I am thrilled if a veteran comes in and is asking for help, and we can help them.
It's going to happen right then.
Really fulfilling. Oh, absolutely.
As we wrap up here, what can we do? What can we do better? Because there's always, people like they want to show their support for veterans, all this. What can we do better? What are we lacking at?
I have a little soapbox right now, Sean. Okay. Something, we've talked before, after the Vietnam War, it was a national moral emergency where we didn't respect veterans returning from combat, spitting on veterans in the airports. And we did a really good job of not doing that with the recent conflicts. But I've unfortunately been seeing some change in that, and it's social media. So, we've become a society of trolls for some reason on social media. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, that's also extending to veterans. So people just saying really horrible things to veterans that are on social media. And what I would say to the community is just stop. Our veterans deserve nothing but gratitude and respect. And to do something just to be a troll on the social media, I mean, look at yourself in the mirror. That is just not appropriate.
Absolutely. And well said. I appreciate you coming back. I appreciate what you're doing with veterans in our area. Dr. Luke Angerizer, thank you.
Thank you, Sean.